Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Voice Line FM Los Angeles. 102.3 FM Riverside.
And 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
Okay, welcome back into the House of Mystery. And of course, I'm Al Warren and co-hosting today from the East, from the Boston, smoky Boston area. And that's not because of the fires. But we've got Marty. No, you don't like
Marty.
That one? Yeah,
no.
I thought, I was trying to shorten. David.
I think North, Rose is better.
Rose, yeah, David Rose Martino in Boston. That's because he, you know, he kills the ladies and leaves a
right.
rose on their bed. no, not really.
Don't tell my wife.
Well, no, she doesn't listen. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You don't let her listen. She's not allowed to listen. You know? So anyway, enough of that goofy stuff, you know. I was like, so now today we've got all-important guest, exclusive from Creative Edge, of course, Big Mickey. You're so fine, Mickey. So today we are running, he's just like, I don't even know what to call him, but he's got books, he's done some acting, he's done some, you name it. You know, fitness, he does it all. So Mr. Ace Antonio Hall, thank you for being here.
That must have been one of the most eloquent introductions I've ever had. Thanks for having me.
You haven't been introduced very much, then. I'll tell you, because that's you know, I'm not really that guy, right? I barely can speak. I don't even know why they've got me here. Gosh, you know, I said I hardly walk and talk, and I'm colorblind, and geez. Wow. So you have got quite a career going on, like quite a, you kind of do it all in a sense. Who is Ace Hall? Like, what? Who are you then, and why have you had such a wild life, sort of?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I'm a creative, and I think I, you know, just through osmosis, through DNA, got that from, you know, genetically from my father, who was an artist, a painter, a poet. He wrote this, classic jazz song, So What, by Miles Davis. Now, they just walked off the stage. And I think just being around him, it just kind of spelled out, you know, that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. And as a creative, I just wanted, you know, you can't help it. You wake up with just things in your mind that just has to be done. And so I delved in a lot of different things until I found my niche, I guess you could say.
So did you find, like, so what do you consider your niche? Is that the writing?
Absolutely. I consider myself a wannabe in all the other categories. I've always, even when I taught school for 13 years, it was kind of like a fluke. I was one of the best teachers, and when I say that, I mean I was awarded, you know, as one of the best teachers in the district in New York, and I was also awarded as director of a few different programs. But I never felt like I fit in, you know, in music. I never felt like I fit in, you know, it was kind of a fluke a little bit, the experiences I've had. Acting, same thing, but writing was the one thing, and it took me about 11 years to get it right. But writing is the one thing that I feel like I fit in, that I was made to do. I'm a storyteller.
Well, okay, so what did you find? You say it takes 11 years, so in your particular case, you've got the creative side. That's there. So
yeah.
What was the 11-year development or challenge for you?
Whew, listen, so I went to school at Long Island University, the CW Post campus, and I studied screenwriting and I guess production and directing. That's what I majored in. And I never wrote a daggone script in my life, a full script in my life. You know, I went straight from graduating into the studio. And so in 2008 was when I decided to quit my near six-figure job as an associate producer at the director of education at the Silver Learning Center in Northridge, California, to pursue and learn how to write. Now, I thought I could write. I taught English for a decade, and I thought I could write, you know, and I had background in screenwriting, but writing a novel is a whole different level. So it took me that long to get to, as one of my buddies, David Gerald, said, it takes about a million words and you're still practicing. So it took me about that long to kind of really figure out how to write, you know, to a degree where my peers in the literary industry saw me. As you know, I always think of Avatar, like when she said in the first Avatar, the Avatar that's only come out, I see you. It took me 11 years before they could really see me, and that just took a lot of studying and classes and workshops and writing and reading. Of course, I read hundreds of books in the 11 years, 50 in the first year of writing. And so that's what I mean, and it took me that long to kind of figure out that I actually had a little bit of magic as a storyteller and as a novelist.
Yeah. Okay. So, but when you actually go to try and publish a book, it's there's a lot of rejection. It's kind of scary. There's all sorts of feelings and emotion that come with that. But
yeah,
there must have been something that lit that fire. There must have been a catalyst that made you brave enough, because that takes a lot of courage to actually put your work out that you're doing, comes from you, it's personal, you put this work out, and anybody can say anything. People can reject you, people can say, oh, that's garbage, or, you know, it's such a social media world.
Yeah.
So was there something or someone that kind of got you to do that?
That's, Alan, that's a great question, and the best way I can answer that is through, I want you to visualize you going into a bakery and tasting the best, you know, pie or best cake you've ever had in your entire life. That baker was probably meant to do that. That baker, or, you know, whatever it may be, a six-year-old that writes a symphony that lasts through the ages, you know, and his name is Ludwig. It's in me. I wake up and it's, you know, not to sound schizophrenic, but I wake up and the characters speak to me. The stories speak to me. I'm sitting anywhere. I'm waiting in line at the grocery store and I have these ideas and they have to come out on paper. And it's the only time of any of the things that I've ever done where it doesn't stop. I wake up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, I have to write because there's something inside of me pushing me. So they're either in a past life, if you believe that kind of thing, I was a writer or something, but that's what really drove me. The rejections, I think, came from a life of being persistent and learning how to be disciplined. I was disciplined in a lot of things, but you know, I wasn't a rock singer. I tried rock for a while, and, you know, nothing ever came of that. You say social media? Heck, I got, you know, I would put videos out and get maybe three people viewed it, you know? But it was once I started writing that I started really seeing that, okay, I have something here. When I started writing short stories, the three of my short stories back in 2017, I started writing in 2016 short stories. Three of my short stories were on the reading list at the Horror Writers Association to be a Bram Stoker, for a Bram Stoker, you know, to be recognized or to be, what do you call it? The reading list comes right before it's nominated, to be nominated. So I was on the reading list along with Stephen King for my short stories. And that's when I knew, okay, you got something going here. You got some magic. You got to keep pressing on. You got to polish this up. You got to learn what you need to learn and make it happen.
Well, speaking of short stories, and you've written short stories and novels. Do you prefer writing short fiction, or do you like the longer form better? Do you feel you're more of a natural short storyteller or a natural novelist?
I'm a novelist. I you know, I have too much to say to put in a short story. Short story was a great discipline. It taught me how to get what you need to say done quickly. But I just love the whole world of writing novels and building worlds. I just love that so much.
That's, you know, you said when you were in the supermarket or wherever, you sort of get these ideas and your characters speak to you. So what, do you just write it on the back of the lady in front of you's shirt?
Well, you know what? No.
I'm just curious. Yeah, you get a felt out and start writing it all over her blouse. No, but when they come to you, actually, this is important.
Yeah.
These characters speak to you, say, so you hear voices.
Yeah.
You're like Dave. You see, Dave, yes, we keep him locked up in the basement because he hears awesome voices, right? Well, you don't want to let him loose.
No.
He's not a person you want to meet. So, but when you hear these voices, how do you know what to do with them? Like, how do you know who they are, where they come from and stuff?
That, you know, I think part of it comes from, well, the voices come from characters that I've developed in my stories. So I can go over and over and over again of a certain scene. And once I write the scene down, and the scene may not work or it is working, I hear the characters, I hear the dialogue in my head. And sometimes I hear the characters do, you know, play out the dialogue, and I'm like, oh, that's not right. But sometimes it's a revelation, like, oh, that's why that character did this, because, you know, she likes ice cream, whatever it is. I'm just saying for an example. And yeah, I've written them on, I've been in Hooters and eating wings and writing them on napkins. I've written them on my hand, yes, on the back of shirts, wherever I can write them.
There's not a lot of skirt in that place, but yes, as I can imagine what you're writing them on. But no, that's all good. Yeah, but do you feel personally attached to your characters then? Like, do you feel like, you know, a lot of writers, we interview tons, you know, hundreds a year. So in fiction, they have these, you know, this creative process. So do you feel like they're your family or your friends, or do you, like, have your kids? Like, where do you stand with your characters?
For one, I feel like they're not family, because I try to put them through as much turmoil as I can possibly put them through. So maybe I did that earlier to my brother, but if it's not family, and as far as being attached, yes, I do feel a certain attachment to them, but I've learned also that I have so many characters. I always start off with a million characters, and I have to just kill them off or get rid of them or convert them into one. So, I guess I am a little attached to them, but not to the point where, you know, they control me. And that's what I'm saying now. But
well, just wondering, you know, I've had a character once that was in one novel and then just, like, showed up in another novel. And just said, I'm here, and you're gonna write me into this novel. I was just wondering, have you had any character, any of your characters ever done anything that maybe surprised you?
Yes, absolutely. One of my characters that I'm writing now, I started out as, you know, I wanted that character to be benevolent and just a really good character, and I realized that that character was a killer. That surprised me. Yeah.
Interesting.
Now your characters, you're not hearing voices and you're going out and killing people or anything. Or anything. I just want to make sure, right? I mean, it's like, you know. Yeah, but when
you also saw medication here.
Yeah, yeah. We have the drive-through here is open. No, but I wonder, when you say you killed them off, so, you know, it's funny, one of the, J.D. Horn is a big writer, and when we had him here, he said he would take characters and kill them off that were people that he had met that were really rude, maybe in a shopping line or cut them off and stuff. So he would take that person and write them in, and they would be the one that would have a terrible death. So I found that that'd be really interesting. So, of course, I didn't cut them off, or I wouldn't. But do you get characters from people you've met?
Yes, but I don't punish. I don't find a person that I met and want to punish them as a character. I don't do that. But you know, growing up, do you remember? I come from the era where, you know, our cartoons were. I just want to say classy. I'm not saying that the cartoons today aren't. You know, I love The Simpsons and stuff like that, but. You know, we had the Bugs Bunny that played classical music. And all of those cartoons from Fred Flintstone, the Flintstones, you know, they were the Honeymooners, you know. You could kind of attach those cartoons to something identifiable. Even the way Deathstroke is the same thing as, what's that guy? Wade Wilson is the same thing as Slade Wilson, you know, DC and Marvel. And I think from being exposed to so many stories, being exposed to so many films, TV, and people in real life, you can't help but take certain personalities and put them into a character. You know, so, I mean, it's a melting pot of all the different experiences that I've had visually. And all, you know, and just through experiences.
Well, how do you keep track of your storylines and your characters? Do you have any process or any tools or anything like that that you use to keep track of multiple characters and storylines?
Man, I'm all over the place. you know, I have certain templates that I write in, and now that on my iPhone, there's like notes that I can write, and I try to keep folders of characters or certain like their powers or abilities or character traits. But I have like 10,000 of them, and it just gets overwhelming. You try to go through it a little bit. So I'm all over the place. But I think part of it of just writing it down helps keep me a little structured. But there's so many different ideas and all over the place, and you have to have something to try to keep it organized. So I use my notepad.
I wonder what's going to happen if you ever get Alzheimer's and you're older and you have all these characters. You want to tell who's real and who's not. just saying. I just be careful, you know.
Tell Marty to leave me alone. Yo.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be sick. It's time for dinner, Blanche. Well, that's interesting. So now your award winner at the Bram Stoker Award is
Bram Stoker.
Oh, sorry. I was at the Stroker Awards, and I thought
I was going to get us in trouble.
I thought for sure you were there. I guess I made a mistake. Sorry, but for the
you were at the strokes for different folks. All right?
Well, you know, the Stroker Awards is a lot of fun. I'll tell you. Yeah, but you get a free bag with towels in it. You know, but no. So you're 2019. Bram Stoker Awards. Okay. So so you did a book and you won that. I guess it was the an award for young kind of science fiction, kind of that sort of story. Where did that novel come from for you? And that's called Awari Mosaic.
That's it, yeah.
And so how did that come to you?
You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. So I've always wanted to write a story like Quincy Medical Examiner. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
TV series?
Yeah.
A medical procedural. I just always wanted to write a story like that. And maybe after watching The Hound of Baskerville, the old one, the original one, about the fourth time, an idea came to me. Now, the two don't even collide. I mean, the two don't correspond, but somehow or another, wanting to write a medical procedural and a detective story at the same time, A War in Mosaic was born.
I don't believe it.
Me neither.
There has to be something. You're not telling us the truth. That's all right. I understand. You know, people like, you know, artists like to keep secrets, and we understand. You know, it goes all over. But were you expecting that kind of response? Were you expecting the award and what happened around this book, or were you just sort of, was it a complete surprise?
You know, Taoism says, Taoism says, do your work and let go, you know, and I did the best that I could for that. And I was working on another project, another novel. I had no idea it would be that well received. Yes, of course, you write a book and you want it to do well, and you want it, you know, your peers to like it and to be recognized. I had no idea that it would get the response that it got. So it was a wonderful surprise.
But then do you feel pressure to, do something much the same again? Does that kind of make you feel like...
Oh. Yes. I knew you were going to ask that. Yes. Yes. And it makes it, you know, the book that's coming out in September is called Lipstick Asylum, which is really a reimagining of my first novel, which was called The Confessions of Silver Slasher. It's a reimagining of that. I retired Silver Slasher, and now I have this new character named Cozy Coleman. And she's a kick-butt zombie slasher. But, you know, I just had no idea that it was going to get that kind of response. And now I sit down and I write, and it's I'm just a lot more, what's the word, pedantic. I'm a lot more pedantic with everything. I go over each chapter over because, you know, you want it to be the same. But I realize that, you know, artists are known, a lot of artists are known for one special thing. Most artists probably are known for one special thing. When I say artists, I mean like musicians and actors, you know, and as well as authors are known for one thing. And it's, so it's very hard to duplicate that, you know, that success in their path. But so I realized that, but you still try to do it. So yeah, it's a lot of pressure. And the book that I'm writing now, it's taken about 2 years, and I have over 100,000 words, and I'm still cleaning and chopping stuff off and polishing it up. So yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but does it change your focus in writing? Like when you look back and you've kind of completed a lot of it, do you think that because you were in the back of your mind, you have this thought about, okay, after an award and doing a follow-up, does it make you rethink your writing a lot?
No, it just makes me want to be better. You know, if you like that, wait till my next book. It's going to be even better. You know, and I'm trying to just make it, you know, I guess every artist, if you've known anyone who's a creative and they let you see or hear something that they've done that hasn't reached the public yet, but they've done it a while ago, you know, they always say, that's old. That's, you know, here's some good stuff here, you know, and you're like, hey, it hasn't even reached the public yet. This is some great stuff, man. That's okay. You know, we're always trying to be better. And, you know, so my next book, I'm pretty sure will be the narrative will be stronger. The characterization will be stronger. The plot will be stronger. You know, I'm going to make sure there aren't any plot holes. All the different things that I thought I kind of got wrong in the book that won the award, you know, I'm going to try to make it better in the next book.
Well, with you're just talking about how artists are known sometimes for one thing. And in that same vein, I was just wondering, you know, I have some friends who have kind of lamented that they've been labeled zombie writers or vampire writers.
And yeah.
Some have found peace with it. Do you ever worry about being, I guess, like typecast as a zombie author or anything like that?
Not really, because I mean maybe, but I'm not really worried about it because I have, well, for one, my father created, I'm reintroducing a character that my father created in 1963. Wow. It was published and it was the first black superhero that came out in 1963, 3 years before Black wow. Panther, which was 66. And wow. so, thank you. And so I'm delving into a whole new world of superheroes. So I still want to attach the horror and sci-fi spin to it. But, you know, who knows what will happen from that. And it's still in the same multiverse of all these different characters I'm creating. So who knows, you know, we'll see. That's all I can say is we'll see. But I don't think that I will be typecast as a zombie writer. But we'll see. Hmm. And Warren Mosaic has nothing to do with zombies.
Okay. I was going to say, Warren Mosaic is probably like your Vogue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a virgin. I don't know.
Inside joke.
Yeah. but now,
and
you know.
I still get roses to this very day.
Yeah, every year. It's been 30 years. I'm happy. You know? Yeah, fresh roses once a year. I tell you, it's not many people can say that. But in the stories, like Oweri, is there a subtext? Do you put some sort of, you know, someone takes home the book and reads it, and of course they get the main theme, the story, they read about the characters, all that sort of stuff, the surface stuff. Is there a subtext or is there something you want that reader to take home besides that?
You know, I think all writers have like a little subtext, whether they admit it or not, you know, what they really are writing the story for. And sometimes I think the key is to almost keep it hidden, you know, under layers, you know, so either you're not too preachy or you're not too intellectual or you're not too cheesy, whatever it is. And so the subtext, part of the subtext there has to do with just the way I believe the government or governments from different worlds are always going to be, you know, are always going to be the oppressor. That's part of it. And then the other part of it is I just believe that one day we're going to be able to capitalize or be able to figure out how to use our consciousness or how to tap into our consciousness a lot more than we're doing now. Hey, if Bezos can send, you know, people up in space, you know, I think, you know,
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think scientifically and technologically, we're moving really, really fast towards understanding how the conscious mind works and figuring out and making certain type of electronics and tools and computers that can tap into the brain and our neural implant and you know, like carbon, like well, altered carbon, you know, with neural implants, they have stuff like that now. So the subtext is really about, you know, opening up a whole new world of how we can tap into our consciousness.
Now, yes. You go by that name for you, two of the books, Orrery and Lipstick. And on some of the other books, you're under Ace Antonio Hall. So me being a Canadian here, maybe explain where that comes from and what Nzondi is.
Yeah. So part of, okay, so in 2017, in 2007, first of all, my full name is, before I go into that, what happened in 2017, my full name is Asi Mandisi, which is A-C-E is the first three letters, which is really supposed to be pronounced Ase. Asi Mandisi Nzondi Hall. That's my real name. My middle name is Nzondi. And Asi Mandisi was a king of Kush, Africa, who laid down the stellar systems for the first calendar. King Asi Mandisi. And so, you know, growing up, I think it was about ninth grade. So growing up, everyone called me Nzondi and Nzondi growing up by my middle name, Nzondi. Everyone called me that. I mean, my friends called me Zombie. Maybe that's where I got the whole attachment to zombies from, you know, Zombie, you know, when they were kidding around. And in ninth grade, I switched schools and went to a school called Paxson Junior High School in Jacksonville, Florida. And I said, you know what? I want to be cool now. My name is Ace, you know, and that's when I became Ace in ninth grade. I wasn't cool at all. I was corny and a nerd, but, you know, couldn't tell me that then. So that's when I became Ace. So in 2017, a friend of mine told me that one of my father's first publishers was looking to contact me. And he had no way to contact him. I said, well, do you have his number? He said, no. So I don't know. I looked it up on the internet and there it was very easily. You know, I found it very easily. And I called him. Now, Alan, you're not going to believe this again.
I don't believe it.
I'm going to call.
Don't believe it.
I called the guy up, and he answered the phone. Who is this? And I told him who I was. And, you know, he was a friend of my father's, and he was one of the people who published, was one of the first publishers of my father. And he said, my father used to call me Mandisi, as opposed to Assy Mandisi, he'd call me Mandisi. And this man said, Mandisi, I was just now sitting here looking at my phone, wondering how I could get in contact with you, and you called me. That's when I knew, okay, so this conversation was meant to be. It had to be. You know, and so he told me, hey, Black Panther just made $1 billion and it's doing so well. I think now's the perfect time to reintroduce your dad's character into the world. And so we talked for a long time. He gave me some names, some publishers that I could contact, and I did. And I didn't like what they had to say. But So it began a whole new path of me becoming more Afrocentric and attaching myself to, you know, my, you know, who I really am. No longer Ace, which was a facade, you know, I'm not Ace anyway. It's not Ace, but really becoming who I, you know, I grew up being called in Zondi and attaching myself to my cultural roots in Zondi. And you know what? I really believe there's a strength in names, and daggone it, as soon as I chose in Zondi, that book won the Bram Stoker. So, not saying that was all that was to it, but, you know.
I don't believe it.
Magic.
I don't believe it.
Came full circle.
Yeah, it's not. Hey, actually, what's it like, but when you take a character that your dad created, first of all, and you bring that person, that character back to life, isn't that kind of a really hard thing to take on? Because you are not him. You are a part of your father, but you are a different person, a different soul. So that means you'll have different intentions, maybe.
Yeah.
You'll have different. So does this sort of get in the way, or how do you deal with that?
You don't know the half of how hard it is. First of all, my father didn't give me much to work on. You know, the character has no secret identity, and, you know, so it's just trying to, you know, the character was like, you know, I'm trying to think of a character, I guess, no, because even Wonder Woman has a secret identity. I can't think of any characters right now who you see them as they are, you know. And so to be able to use these characters, use the character and put him in the world that I wanted to put him in, you know, he had no real, he didn't have a strong backstory. So I'm developing the backstory while still trying to pay homage to my father's, you know, original character. So it's very difficult. And that's part of why it's taking so long to get where I'm going now. And Dad, I hope you like it, you know, rest in peace. But, you know, we're going to see what happens. And yeah, it's very difficult because, you know, like I said, Dad didn't give me much to work with.
Well, maybe have him identify as a woman, or have him being really a woman identifying as a superhero man. Okay. You can see why I don't write fiction.
Did you hear the cricket?
Yeah. Well, you can see why I don't
radio
write.
Radio listeners, did you hear this?
Well, they know. They know. I don't write fiction. And you know, that's sort of, this is why. Well, it was a try. You know, I'm trying to help you out. Give you ideas. No. Get you up there.
Actually, that's a great idea. And I love the way we're in the times. We're in the era now, where the original comic book character looks different now. I mean, Captain America, I believe, you know, was a woman in the comic books. Same thing with Thor, Black Panther. So I love that, you know, we're getting to an age where we can change genders, change races, you know, and just have this very diverse collective mentality that heroes look like you, look like me, look like anyone. So I love that. So that's, you know, I mean, just the other day I was watching Loki and there was alligator Loki. So, you know, I love it. I love it.
Well, I don't think I'd be a superhero. That's, you know, bald, old, no. super shine. So where do you see yourself going? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh, see, now that's a tricky question. That's the kind of question. That's the kind of question when your wife asks you, am I getting fat? Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yeah. Do these pants make my ass look fat? No.
Yeah. You got to watch how you answer that, because one can sound too confident and too cocky and the other can sound, too shy. Okay.
What are you looking to go towards? So without a conclusion and saying, oh, I'm going to be this, what's your kind of goal or what are you looking to accomplish in the next 10 years? How's that?
How about if I tell you what I would love?
Okay.
I don't know where but this is what I would love. I would love to be at a place 10 years from now where I have a company that has its footings in every part of the entertainment industry. I would love that. I would love for video games, for virtual reality games, for board games, films, anime, animation, novels, and I even have some ideas for radio with writing. I would love to have a company that has, you know, that has branches that touches all of those different, is music that touches all of those different entities. I would love that. Will it happen? I don't know. I know that I'm focused on writing a ton of novels, but it would be great. I can tell you this. I always wanted to do a comic book. And after talking to my buddy, Russell Nolte, a couple of weeks ago, I don't want to do a comic book. Yeah, you can adapt it to comic books, but it's just like being a lawyer and a doctor. It's a whole new profession. I don't want to learn how to, you know, do comic books. If you want to adapt it, great. So that kind of took the taste out of my mouth. But it would be wonderful to have a company that has branches that touches on all the entities of entertainment. In 10 years, I think that could be, I think that's something that I could believe could happen in 10 years.
Well, I think, didn't Harvey Weinstein have that? But, but you know, I'm not going there. Anyway.
I look more towards a Steven Spielberg.
Good choice.
I wanted to make sure I asked you this. Writing is a sedentary profession. And, I enjoy it. I do martial arts and some fitness myself.
What form?
Well, I do also Taekwondo, Jeet Kune Do.
You do Jeet Kune Do too?
I've done Jeet Kune Do and Kali, Jeet Kune Do concepts. And yeah, I've done a lot of that stuff. And, I'm trying to get rid of my gut. And even though I like fitness, you know, it's some of it's not working. So, you know, and I know you wrote a book called Lord of the Flies: Fitness for Writers, and Lord of the Flies being, I believe, dumbbell flies. Do you have any advice for writers or anybody who's sedentary in a profession in keeping fit during long stretches behind the keyboard?
I have a lot of advice, but I know that writers are probably not going to take it. But I think the key really is, for me, it's all about mental acuity. So if you want to keep sharp, and I'm on tons of caffeine and coffee all day long, and so I know how easy it is to be kind of groggy. It's not, I can't write when I'm groggy. The ideas aren't sharp. They aren't there. So to add with the caffeine and to add to sharpen your mental acuity, I think you should be active. And active can be just doing something for 10 minutes every single day, walking around the block, while you're sitting there, with a 5-pound weight, you take every time you stand up after an hour or so to kind of stretch out a little bit, you work out with the 10-pound weights, whatever it may be. I just feel like you should do that at least 10 to 15 minutes every single day, 7 days a week. And I think that it will definitely help your writing. So if you want to help your writing, I think you should develop a discipline for being active.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and stop eating fast food too.
Yeah,
just saying,
Don't
have a diet. Yeah, now, how do you want people to find you? Like, do you have a website or a street address or like what? How do you want people to Well, whatever you want. Like, you might want them coming by your house, or do you want them to go to a website or a Facebook? Or like, what's your best sense of communicating with
you parents? I'm on usually three sites regularly. One is for older people, one is for younger people, and one is for I don't know what these people are. So one is Facebook. It's just under my name, Ace Antonio Hall. I have like 10,000 different Facebooks, but I think right now it's the one that has the cover for my book Lipstick Asylum. That one's the most current one. So that's Facebook for people my age, which is 40 and up. And for the younger group, I do have TikTok. I had to get rid of the app on my phone because I get on TikTok and I'm like, oh my God, hours pass. I'm looking and laughing at all the video. It's just, I can't do it. But I also have Instagram. So I love Instagram. I'm on Instagram every day. And you can find me on Instagram. Again, it's under my name, Ace Antonio Hall, and then parentheses, N-Z-O-N-D-I. N as in Nancy, Z-O-N as in Nancy, D-I, N-Z-O-N-D-I. And on Twitter, I'm on Twitter quite often. And a lot of my writer friends are on Twitter, and all kinds of friends are on Twitter. Yeah. And Twitter is at Nzondi3, the number 3, at N-Z-O-N-D-I and the number 3. So you can find me in any one of those. Follow me. I have some really cool, really cool giveaways for people who follow me on Instagram. So check it out.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure we have a connection on that on the website, post that. So during this last couple of years with all the crazy stuff, pandemic and, up and down and people, it's been a lot of stress, a lot of turmoil. A lot of fighting, a lot of anger, all sorts of things going on, conspiracies, like you just got it all. I wonder how it affects you, and if it does that get into your writing, or does it, because I find some people say that they have a terrible time writing, they can't be creative. Other ones saying they write and they're more creative because they want to escape what's going on. I hear all sorts of things. What's your reaction to the last couple of years?
I tell you that I thought that the pandemic was going to be wonderful for my writing. I was going to write 10 books, and it just has not happened that way. With more time, you waste more time, I feel like. And so, although I try to stay disciplined, I wake up 4 or 5 in the morning and write, there are also times that everyone has been touched, I believe, during the last year and a half of this pandemic, of finding sorrow and loss. And so I've definitely had my share of that, and that affected my writing. In different ways, I try to take the sorrow, the pain, and convert it into something that could be therapeutic through my writing. And so I've done a little bit of that, but it also makes you not want to write, So I needed an escape. And part of that escape was I think I've watched more television than I ever have in the past year and a half. I used to laugh at people that binge watch. I'm like, how are you sitting there watching 4 or 5 hours of a TV show when you can be doing something productive? And I'll sit my behind there and, you know, I've watched like seven, a whole thing. If that, you know, like some of the BBC shows are like 6 or 7 episodes, I'll watch the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so I found myself doing that a lot during this pandemic. And then having to kind of like taper down and say, you got to get back to your writing, you know, because I used to write when I sat down to write, and, you know, I'd write, you know, 6 hours, you know, straight. And I haven't done that. I've done that maybe twice this whole pandemic. So I do like 2 hours here, 2 hours there. So it's definitely affected my writing in many different ways. And it's also influenced my writing. I've tried to stay away from, at first I thought about infusing a pandemic-like atmosphere in some of my books, you know, what's going on now. And it just didn't work. So I've stayed away. I've frayed away from that.
I wonder if you'll look back in 5 years at what you've been writing during this time and think and see some of the things in your writing when we're past all this.
I definitely will, because one of my something that directly affected me, you know, this past year. So my brother was one of the first people to have COVID. Right in March. Mm. And he went to the hospital 3 times and they turned him away saying he didn't qualify. You know, he didn't have the, whatever they used to say back then in March, satisfy the conditions or have the symptoms. And so he went back 3 times and then, within a 5-day period, he passed away that 5th day.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, so he was there to drop my mother off, and then my mother passed away from respiratory about 2 months after that. And then one of my closest aunts, when my mother passed away, said she was ready to go, and I said, no, you come on, you know. And she was having health problems, and 1 month after my mom's funeral, my favorite aunt, you know, who took me to my first football game, you know, she passed away only 3 days after getting COVID. So that was within a 2-3 month period, you know, 3 favorite people in the world. Mm-hmm. And then 2 of my sisters got it, but they recovered. So the whole thing with my mom, you know, I was lucky enough, the hospital after my brother, same hospital my brother passed in, they let me see my mother after getting a lot of different permission. And that experience is like, you know, it tears my heart just seeing her, you know, there and no one else could visit her and during that whole time. That has gotten into my book. Part of that experience, I creatively put it into my book. So I definitely will be able to look back 5 years from now and see part of what I experienced, that pain. I wanted to capture that pain because, you know, I feel like if you can capture, I feel like everyone in this world can relate to pain. I don't care what age you are. You know, I don't care if you're the Queen, Michael Jackson, I don't care who you are, you know, Elvis, I don't care who you are. You're going to somehow, a parent having teenage kids, you're going to somehow experience pain. And so my goal is to tap into pain as much as possible and put my characters through as much as pain as possible, the kind of pain that the readers can relate to, you know. Not to have dark, sad books, but, you know, to have moments of time in the adventures and the upbeat, you know, part, to have those moments where people can relate to. So yeah, I'll look back and I'll see that, how the pandemic affected my writing. Absolutely.
So Elvis is still alive?
Yeah. You didn't know?
No, nobody tells me these things, you know? I gotta tell you, you know. Wow.
You know, I had a buddy that told me years ago, since you mentioned conspiracy theories, he's a musician, he's an artist, and he told me years ago that, God, I can't say that guy's name. Let me think. Okay, he told me years ago that this particular artist, that Tupac asked this particular very famous artist, how could he disappear without anyone finding him?
Right.
And there was some other circumstances around, you know, what Tupac asked this artist that makes me believe even to this day that Tupac is alive. So you never know. Elvis might be
Well, yeah, you never know. Tupac, you know, I'll give Madonna a call and see, because she used to date him. That was the good old days. But that was, you know, that was a lot of fun back then. Still get my roses. So I was going to say, certainly been a good conversation. We've certainly enjoyed having you on, and you have a lot of good things to say. So
appreciate it.
It's amazing. You know, we'll share everything, of course, on our website and stuff like that. And we've learned a lot today. I can't believe how much we learned. But certainly, if you're in a supermarket and you see Ace, cover up anything that you got that's light color. Yeah, because he's just going to write all over you. Don't do that. You know, just be aware.
David, do we go by Rose, Marty, you know?
Well, we're trying to figure it out.
I know, I answer to anything.
trying to figure it out.
Trying to figure it out. Names have just, power, so.
Yeah. You know, because he sounds like a serial killer when you use his real whole name.
D-N-M.
D-N-M. I go by that, too, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. See? You're getting good. And so now, and before we go, there's got to be, what's your biggest secret?
Well, my biggest secret. You mean besides the Donna thing? Then one knows what we're talking about.
No, but that's, we'll keep that secret. But you've got to have a secret, like a favorite food, favorite color. What is it that people that read your book and fans would be surprised to learn? How's that?
So this was the first year, too. This July 4th is my birthday. And, I'm a health guy. People know that I love peach cobbler, you know, but I really only eat peach cobbler like probably two times a year, somewhere around Thanksgiving. And then 9 months out the year, I'm trying to stay sugar free. You know, I won't even have mints with sugar in it, you know.
Yeah.
And every 4th of July, except for this year, every single 4th of July, I go to this place called Johnny Reb's in California, and I order $40 worth of peach cobbler, big giant pan worth of peach cobbler, and I eat it all by myself in two or three days.
There you go. I don't believe it.
Yes. They make it with drop biscuit. I mean, the texture, I mean, fresh peaches, and it's just so good. And then the texture of having that drop biscuit, all of the bread mixed in with the peach cobbler, oh my God, it's the best thing. And I've been to maybe 20 different restaurants, I've been to 20 different places that did peach cobbler in California. And this place, Johnny Reb's, is the best. Plus, their ribs fall off the bone. I'm just saying. So I don't think people know that much.
Yeah, like you don't need anything to eat. You've had enough. Well, you're trying to lose the gut. You can't eat rib and peach cobbler. Jeez. Well, our guest, Ace Antonio Hall. Thank you for being here.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Alan. Thank you,
Rosie.
Whatever my name is.
Party.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
DNL. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Ace.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.